I'm Cindy Queen. This is In the Classroom, and I'm sitting with Lance Key, and I'm going to let Lance tell you a little bit about himself because, this podcast, really the topic of it is technology in the classroom and how it's changed over time. And I think this podcast could probably be a podcast in itself. I mean, I could probably have five podcasts over technology. But I'm going to let Lance tell us a little bit about himself and what he does.
Yes, I'm Lance Key. I am the support specialist for Future Ready here in Putnam County. There's a lot of duties that are kind of tied into that. One that you would see in most school system would be instructional technology specialist. So I help with instructional technology throughout the school district, whether it be Google tools in the classroom, or whether it be using ViewSonic touch panels, things like that, or anything really that is used on a website or something like that. I will try to help do training with that. My background is in mathematics, so I've taught everything from sixth grade math to AP calculus. Also certified to teach personal finance, machine learning, AI, and a few other things along the way.
I have a whole list of questions. The last time that I interviewed Adam and Sam about technology, I talked about common misconceptions about technology and education. And one of those that we addressed was that technology replaces traditional teaching methods and diminishes the role of the teacher. And how would you address that common misconception? Does it take the role of the teacher?
I definitely do not think that it does.
I don't either.
Number one, you know, if we look at Maslow's hierarchy of learning, we will see that until a student's, you know, physical needs are met, then we can't, you know, really get into the actual teaching. So therefore, you have to have that human connection that's there. A computer can't, you know, make a student feel comfortable. It cannot welcome a student into class, you know, an AI model or something like that. Can't do those things. So first, you got to connect with students. Second, you have to engage the students into learning. And a computer can't do all those things to where that human person can do that. Now, I do think that, you know, instructional technology and things like that can enhance the learning, but you first have to have that teacher there that makes that connection with the students.
Absolutely. That's my favorite part of teaching, is the part where we make the connections with the kids, being in there. You can make connections with kids when you're doing online learning too, which is something that we'll talk about today. But I think it's a terrible misconception that there's such an important role between the teacher and the student that it can't be overstated. All students, here's another misconception. A lot of people think that all students are tech savvy and know how to use technology effectively. Now, Lance is laughing his butt off right now. So what do you think about that, Lance?
So I think this is a huge misconception that we have. I think students know how to do the things that they know how to do and do those well, such as use their iPhones and look things up online and things like that. But when we get into actual use cases of, you know, how do you use Google Docs, or how do you use Microsoft Word, or how do you build a presentation, you know, or how do you write a computer program? These are things that they don't know. And that's things that have to be taught. And even if they do know how to, you know, do some of the technological things to bring it on there, do they know how to do it eloquently? Do they know how to do it in MLA format, APA format? Do they know what a good slideshow presentation looks like? Because it's not all images. It's not all text that you put on the screen. So there's so many things that have to be taught along the way.
Mm-hmm. Some of the ed tech tools that we use now that's a good example. They don't know how to do that on their own, so they have to have someone show them how to do it. And AI isn't going to necessarily, it probably can teach them how to use, say, Flipgrid or that sort of thing, but getting someone in front of them to show them how to creatively do it in the different ways and different avenues to explore, that kind of AI is not quite out there yet, is it?
No. The things like that do not. I mean, there's AI out there that will build presentations for you,
yes.
And the students can use that to just, you know, have it build something out, but to actually teach them those pieces. It can give suggestions, but to actually teach and walk them through that, no, it's not there yet.
Okay. So how do you feel about how far a student should be able to go using AI? 'Cause you mentioned them building a presentation using AI.
Yeah, so that's a great question. I always like to fall back on my previous experiences. I remember in 1998, I was a senior in high school, and Google came out. And I remember the uproar that was in education because kids are going to be able to just Google something and get the answer to something, and they're going to be able to cheat and do all these things. And we fought it for a good probably 10 years. And then we have now embraced Google and some of the tools and being able to do research and things like that on the internet, not just using a card catalog anymore or an encyclopedia. I really feel like that's where AI is going to get in the future. In education, we do fight it a lot of times at first because there are cheating and there's some things you can do through that. But there's also some really neat things that you can do. An example I saw the other day, and I thought this was a great example. A teacher went in and used a program called ChatGPT. That's probably the most well-known AI engine that's out there right now. And they had ChatGPT write the first act of a play. So they typed in, write the first act of a play with 20 characters that is about, I don't know, blah. And it wrote the first act of that play.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And so then the teacher had the students act out that play, the first act. And the students were buying into it because it's the first time this play's ever been acted out. They had that authentic experience of this is
brand new. That's incredible.
Yeah. But then the teacher flipped it on them and said, all right, now you've seen act one. I want you to go back and I want you guys to write act two because you've got buy-in into this now. You played that character. Yeah. So, you know, I think that it's really not how far should we let the students go with it. I think that we've got to be creative enough to say, what do we wish that our students could do? And can AI help me do that?
I think that's awesome. Yeah. I think it would be cool if that teacher went and had them, you know, in groups of five. You do act, okay, we've done act one, you do act two, you guys do act three, you guys do act four, and you guys do act five. And they write the whole thing together as a group.
Yeah, that's an awesome idea. And I know you as an English teacher, you may steal that idea and use it.
I am going to use that idea.
And I may come watch y'all's play then.
Yeah, you can come and watch it. We'll actually put it on at Vital. We'll put it at the we'll ask White Plains if we can borrow their auditorium, and we'll just go for it.
There you go.
How about it?
I like it.
Oh, my goodness. If you could invent a hilarious app for learning, what would it do?
Well, I mean, that one to me is kind of simple. it would just make kids and people laugh. I mean, you said it in
sure.
Itself. I think that a lot of times we get so stuck in the mud sometimes on, you know, doing in education that we forget about the fun. You know, I feel like that when I go to something and I'm laughing and I'm having a good time while I'm learning, it's meaningful when I remember it. But if it's something that I'm just dreading going to day in, day out, who wants to do that? So I think it's just something that would be personable to each student and would make all of them laugh. Because then if they're having fun, they want to be there and they'll enjoy that.
So maybe it would be an app that would personalize according to each individual student.
Yeah.
Maybe even help. I really do. I love these chatbot joke generators because, I mean, if you if you look at them, they're dad jokes. They're big time. But still, having a kid go in there and, you know, they could write, create something based on just some kind of joke generator or something. I don't know.
Right. You know, and one thing, you know, and I worked with Google and a Google certified innovator. But one of the things that I learned when I was working at their office in Sydney was they have what they call a 20% project. 80% of the time at the Google office, you're working on whatever you're supposed to work on, whatever your job is. But then 20% of the time, you get to work on your passion. So I would also, you know, I think that would be something that'd be great. You know, what's their student's passion? What do they want to do? I can think of multiple students that I have right now that some, you know, enjoy the arts Some enjoy the math. Some want to be STEM, you know, or engineers one day. So giving students that time that they can, one, use tools like AI or something like that to investigate, you know, what can I do with this? What do I need to know? I think it's important. So, you know, not it just being this strict streamline of this is what you got to do. Here's all the check marks. Well, let's give you a little time so you can start investigating right now. What's the things that you want to do in life?
I love it. I'm thinking about a couple of students that we have right now who are in STEM. How are you incorporating their love for art into the teaching of STEM? I know you're doing it.
So exactly. So definitely one student that we got in mind. We're working through a program called OnShape right now where they're doing 3D modelings. And we're actually going to be going to the Music City Center in 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
No, a little less than a week. And they are going to be competing with other students in designs for wind turbine. So we built wind turbines that they're going to be taking. And, you know, we've 3D printed some wings. We've laser cut some wings. But they've gone in and they designed, they've drawn all these things. And now we're trying to make them look pretty because you get more points if they look elegant
they look good,
and pretty.
Yeah.
So we've got a person who's in charge of the vinyl wraps and all that.
So
they're getting to do all that, and they're all excited about it. And I've got one student, I swear, she would be down there all day, every day, if I'd let her, working on it. Yeah.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. So how does this incorporate skills for them for the future? How does this make them future ready?
Yeah. So, you know, we really don't know exactly what these students are going to be doing in the future. But there's skills that's embedded into this, such as they're having to write out an engineering notebook that walks through step by step of how to do each piece of the project that we have. And my rule is, if I can't take your notebook and read through it and do your project, it's not good enough.
Oh, good.
So,
yeah.
So we're incorporating writing and project management and all those things right inside of the STEM classroom. And one big thing that I you know, try to impress upon them. We don't know exactly what you're going to do, but you're probably going to have some technology skills that's involved in whatever you're doing in the future. I mean, you can't even go to Buffalo Wild Wings and apply for a job now without going and doing it online and filling out an application. So being able to teach them those writing skills, how to format things so that they can get a leg up and get a job is important.
I love the fact that you're teaching them to write for clarity. I mean, all that does is, I mean, that just helps me with my job. It does big time.
Yeah, me the math teacher helping write for clarity.
Helping you write for clarity.
We're trying to get there.
Oh goodness. If you could sum up your relationship with a smart board in one word, what would it be?
I don't know that I'm the one that you really want to ask about that, but I don't think I could teach without one anymore. So my word would be life changing.
Yeah, I use mine every day. I don't even know how I went without using one. It's like the computer is so intricate into what we do. I just every day. I mean, when the power goes down or the Wi-Fi goes down, we're like, what? For just a second. Of course, a good teacher comes up with a plan B really fast, but. But all of those things, we're dependent on them, but it's because they work so well now. It used to be like technology works until it doesn't, but it works.
It does. You know, and the ViewSonic boards that we have, to me, is my organizational tool. So I may have Google Slides. I may have Google Docs. I may have videos. I may have manipulatives and interactives that's in my whiteboarding software. But I can bring it all into one place. So it's kind of my thing that if I grab here, and there, bring it all into one place, that way I'm organized as I'm teaching through my lesson. You know, so slide one might be my Google Slides, then I might have a video on slide two that the students are doing, and then we might have a manipulative on slide three that they're interacting with. It just makes it so that it all works.
I like to come in and observe that sometime.
Well, come on down anytime.
Yeah, I'd like to do that, yeah. If you could give a tech-themed award to a student, what would it be for?
A tech theme award. Well, you know, right now I've got one of my students we were talking about that is probably better than I am at using Onshape than I am, which Onshape is a 3D CADing software. I used to work in CAD a lot, but if you don't use it, you lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So today we ran into an issue of we were trying to build a stabilizer for the wind turbine for one of the rods that went through the – we had some vibration that was happening in one of the rods that was going to the generator. So I had a piece that we had drawn and printed out, and it didn't fit exactly right. We were needing to cut off about a quarter of an inch of it. So she just grabbed the computer and started redesigning it right there on the fly, and then we were able to 3D print it, and we're off and running then. So the one innovation I wish we did have, and if anybody's out there listening that can do this, we need better 3D printers. They take too long. We're printing 12 wings right now for another example of a wind turbine, and it's going to take 48 hours to print those. So we need faster and better 3D printers.
So these are like the top-of-the-line ones that take this length of time to...
Well, I mean, it's the best that Putnam County can afford.
I got you.
Yes. But they are good. They are good 3D printers, but... you know, if we could get some better ones, if better ones out there exist, I'd like to know about it. I usually stay on top of those things, but we could use some better 3D printers.
One of the number one misconception, or maybe at least to me, about technology in the classroom is that it's a distraction and that it hinders learning. Like, I think we think... I'm not sure. Maybe that just comes from people who are outside of education now, and that's their perception maybe because of cell phones or something. But I've used cell phones in my favor before in the classroom. I'm sure you have too. You know, just like, okay, get your cell phone out. We're going to do a ticket out the door. I want you to text me the answer really fast or something.
Yeah, you know, and this is one that I could – probably get on a soapbox about and talk
okay.
about for a while. and I'll apologize to anybody that's out there listening. One, I graduated high school in 1999. Education and teaching is not the same as it was back then.
It's not.
And I hate to say this, but students are so they have so much media coming at them today, you know, through their phones, through TVs, through whatever that they're looking at. We have an expectation that is high for us to hit to engage our students in learning. You know, as I said, the first two things to me is, number one, students' needs have got to be met. Number two, we've got to engage the students in the learning. Well, if we're standing in front of the room and we're lecturing the whole time, how engaging is that for our students? But
I can tell you it's not, because it's not engaging for me.
Exactly.
When someone tries to do it for me as an adult, so as a teenager or somebody younger. Mm-mm.
Right. No. And if you think about it, you know, you've also got video games that these kids love to play. And I'm a gamer, too. I love video games. But, you know, you've got cell phones and YouTubes and TikToks and video games. Whether we like it or not, that's the expectation the student has now. So we have to find a way to balance that some way. And I'm not saying that it's fair by any means, but we have to do the best that we can to engage the students in the learning so that, you know, they can learn.
Right. And what is right sometimes isn't always fair anyway, so sometimes we have to meet them where they are. And that's the right thing to do, I think.
That's right. And you know, providing different modalities of learning is important too. Because you do have some students that learn by reading. Some learn by watching videos. Some learn by doing. So how do we make sure that we're meeting all of those needs in the classroom? We have to provide different types of modalities for that same standard, for that same skill that we're trying to teach.
Exactly.
That day.
That's where personalized learning comes into play, I think. And I really am glad that our county is doing, you know, an initiative. That's our initiative. That is what we do now in the classroom. It started in our elementary school and went to middle school, and now it's in high school. We are personalizing our learning for our kids.
Exactly. Yeah, and one way that I like to put it, and, you know, I don't know if this is the best way, but, you know, we have to be all things to all students so that we might reach some, you know?
Exactly. And sometimes we may not feel like we're reaching but one, but it's that one.
Right.
You know. What's the most out-of-the-box use of technology you've seen in a project? I mean, you've seen a bunch. I mean, you've already talked about creating wind turbines and using 3D computers and engineering spec projects and that sort of thing. But
yeah, so one of the big things right now, and I don't think we'll see, I don't know where it's going to go in education, I'll be honest with you. There's two. One is Raspberry Pis. So, and I'm not talking about a Raspberry Pi that, your grandma would make.
Because that sounds delicious.
Yes. Yeah. So Raspberry Pi is a microcomputer that came about because students at universities were carrying around towers to their college classes. So Raspberry Pi is something that would fit in your pocket that you can write programs on, that you can set it up so it'll do different things like that. So after we get through with this wind turbine project, we've got two projects that we're going to do with Raspberry Pis. One is a robot that's going to have sensors on it, and it's going to be able to sniff gases and tell you what types of gases they are. Yeah, so the students will be writing programs to be able to do that. Okay, the second project that we're looking to work at is a hydroponics project. And with the Raspberry Pi will be testing our soil samples and giving us our irrigation levels, giving us nitrogen levels and all those things. So we're going to have a small device that will be doing all those things for us. So Raspberry Pi is being one. The second one, and I feel like this is probably one that will grow a little quicker than the Raspberry Pi, is the drone technology. So I really feel like there's so much that we haven't learned yet with drones that we can do. Obviously the military is using drones right now. Mm-hmm. We've also got farmers are using drones. Farmers are using drones for crop dusting now instead of using planes and things like that. They're also using it to manage their cattle, keep up with how many cattle they've got, where they're at. The police are using it for infrared sensors, looking for escaped convicts and people that are in the woods that they can't get to, looking for drugs, things like that. We've got real estate people that are using it to take pictures of houses. We've got landscapers that are using it to figure out where land masses and things are.
Great.
There's so many different things, and I'm just scratching the surface. We could talk about drones all day, but, it's a skill that students, one, like. And two, they're pretty good at, because if they're a gamer, they're used to using a joystick, and there's two different models that you can use. You can have a screen that's there on your joystick looking at it, doing it, or they make goggles that you can wear, and you're like 3D right there. So that's probably the two biggest technologies that I see coming in the future.
So it seems like you did some kind of project with them last year where they built a drone, maybe, or they were working with drones.
We worked a little bit with drones last year, so yeah. We're working on how to fly them so that then they can decide what route do they want to go in, because, not everybody's going to want to be a farmer, but
right.
Some may want to go into military or the police force, or some may want to be a real estate agent one day. Well, if you can take your own pictures with the drone, you don't have to pay a corporation to do that for you.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, if there were one piece of advice you could give a new educator fresh out of college about the use of technology in their classroom, what would you give them? What would you say?
My advice is really more about, just probably hopefully what you're instilling into your students. Be a lifelong learner. Technology changes so fast. There's things that I try to stay on top of that I'm even behind on right now. So be a lifelong learner. As things come out, learn about it. Be open to change. And don't feel like that this one technology is going to be the way that it always is. In the past, we probably all thought PowerPoint was the future. And making a slideshow presentation on a PowerPoint and presenting, that's what PowerPoint's for. Well, we're seeing now with Google Slides, of course, is what we use.
Canva and Google Slides.
Yes, you got all these things, but we don't use it just for presentations anymore. We're making our yearbook with Google Slides.
I think that's so awesome.
Yeah, we're, we've got kids that are getting on Google Slides, and they're collaborating together, and they're making all these different things. And you can do stop motion videos with Google Slides. So the old Steamboat Willie videos, you can make those on Google Slides. And so many things that you can do with those projects. So just be open to things and you know, be willing to change.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lance, thank you so much. We've run out of time. We've gone over a little bit, and I've had so much fun talking with you. So,
well, thanks for having me today.
Okay, thanks. I forgot to say class dismissed today.
If you want to, we're still rolling. If you wanted to say it, and then I can just cut it and paste it on at the end.
Okay. All right. Class is dismissed.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you so much, Lance.
No problem. Did we feel it all okay?
Oh, yeah.